Up next on the Kevin O'Connor Show, Tom Haverstraw and I are talking about every single game on Christmas Day. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Here with Tom Haverstraw to talk about the Christmas Day games in the NBA. Tom, what a day for the NBA, dude.
Yo, I need a cigarette after that. Like, I feel like after those games yesterday, I need like a Marlboro Red just to kind of wind down and just feel like I need to soak in all that. I don't even smoke cigarettes. I've never smoked a cigarette. So this will be an amazing opportunity later today. I'll just, you know, smoke one, a good Marlboro Red for all good time's sake.
Please don't begin, Tom. Not today.
After Christmas Day games, man, that was exactly what the NBA needed. It was an amazing statement day for the league, and every game had something just, it was awesome. So I was just very excited as someone who covers the league, who's a fan of the league. It was a big moment for the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Yep. LeBron did say Christmas is our day. We'll talk about that Lakers Warriors game later. Let's go in order of the games being played yesterday, Tom, because I want to start off with the Knicks and the Spurs. Knicks won that game 117-114. One of my favorite games of the day. Wemby, 42 points in his debut on Christmas. That Mikal Bridges on the other side, 41 points, hit every single mid-range jumper it seemed like he hit. I felt like watching this game, Tom. My main takeaway for the Knicks is you have Brunson shooting only 9 of 23 from the field, not his best performance. But the Knicks are starting to come into their own where they don't need Brunson to have big nights when you have Mikal Bridges refining himself offensively and Karl Anthony Towns, who can make such a significant impact. The Knicks are trending up in part because of those big additions this offseason.
I wrote about it after the Celtics won the NBA Finals. I said, this is a big five league. You need five guys who can be a star on a given night. And that, to me, is what Mikal Bridges did, Karl Anthony Towns did, picking up the slap for Jalen Brunson. That's the whole idea of making that cat trade, is that not everything has to be Jalen trying to create off the dribble, and then you burn him out after three games. You need these performances to pick up the slack, and 100%. What Mikal Bridges did down the stretch there, and being basically prime alpha, give me the ball and I'm going to go get buckets, was a revelation, especially because you and I, we talked about it. His jumper looked ugly to start the season. He didn't look very comfortable in the Knicks offense. And now he's thriving in a way that, like, I think the Knicks want the playoffs to start today. That's like, Mikal looks great, and I want him to continually do this so that come playoff time, if they don't have it going, the other guys, the top gunners, don't have it going, then we can see Mikal Bridges be like, yo, I can get you 40 in a pinch. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he started off the year, October and November, shooting 30% from three. He's at 46.9%, a very nice percentage for him on 7.4 attempts throughout the month of December. So it wasn't just a hot shooting night on Christmas for people tuning in, watching the Knicks for the first time all month. Bridges has seemingly fixed his shot. It doesn't still look as clean as it has in the past mechanically, but he's found a way to make it look a bit better, and it's falling a lot. And then the mid-range, dude. I mean, some of those fadeaway mid-range jumpers that he hit just over and over and over again, that's a shot that's been falling for him throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm. And that was on display with the 41 points. So I think you nailed it, Tom. It's a big five league. The Knicks currently have a really good, strong starting five. OG Anunoby's been tremendous, very well might be an all-defensive player this year. Josh Hart, everybody knows what he can do. And then Karl Anthony Towns, the sequence he had, I think it was in the third quarter, he just plows through Victor Wembanyama on a hard drive to the rim, and then he hits a three on the possession after that. He's going crazy, showing emotion at MSG. The Knicks did a damn good job in that game, man, because Victor Wembanyama on the other side of that, 42 points on 31 shots. He was 6 of 16 from three, 18 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 blocks. Wemby individually, I said on the pod with Waz earlier this week, I was like, I want for Christmas Wemby to have the best game of his career on Christmas Day. I don't think this was the best game of his career, but it was one of his best. It was a sensational Wemby performance on the other side of that matchup.
Yo.
Yeah, I know. Like, yo. Welcome, Wemby. Welcome.
like, welcome, like, Tiger Woods said, hello world. Vinny Goodwill had a great column after the game, just talking about, like, you know, he had his moment. Victor Wembanyama had his moment where he was like, I'm here. Like, we talk about who's going to take over for LeBron and Steph and KD. It's me. It's me. You see this? I'm 20 years old. I can't legally go to a bar after the Knicks game, grab a beer, and drink it because I'm 20 years old. He is not of age yet, and he's dropping 42, 18, 4, and 4 at Madison Square Garden in his Christmas Day debut. I remember last year, it was, I think, against Dallas on national TV, his first national TV game. I was texting everybody I knew. Watch this kid, Wemby. He is going to be sensational. He is the next big thing in the league. Can't wait for you guys to see him. And he had a dud, an absolute dud on his national TV. do you remember that, Kev? Like, it was like, yeah. It was like he really struggled. And I was just like, man, I just told everybody in my life, you got to stop what you're doing to watch Wemby play. And he was just, he was totally absent. This was the opposite of that. This was to me. This was Steph dropping 54 at Madison Square Garden a few years into the league. I think it was like 2013, I want to say, when he had that magical performance at Madison Square Garden. And then 2 years later, he wins the MVP. LeBron James against Detroit, where he scores the final 25 points of the game for 48 in that game 6 against the Pistons. Then 2 years later, he wins MVP. To me, this was that signature moment where Victor Wembanyama was like, I'm not just up and coming. I am here. And I love the back and forth with my guy Waz, because he is so he is so wrapped up in like that he's not here yet, that he's not a top 25 player. You can't watch what he did yesterday and watch what he did all season long, even at the end of last season, and say that dude's not a top 25 player. Waz was on one, KOC. I wish I was there to defend you. But it was nuts watching Waz on that take. Incredible takes, man.
I mean, look, I love Waz very much. The Wemby take, I just am on the opposite side of the spectrum with him. Like, I think Wemby's top five, top six this season already. He's the most transformational defensive player in the league. And then you add on the fact that he can also have dominant, unstoppable offensive nights. The dude is, at a minimum, already top 10, maybe the 10th best. To me, I think he's sixth or so best so far in the season. But I think he put that on display for the Spurs against the Knicks. The issue is everything else. That's one of the reasons why they lose that game against New York. Brunson has support. Bridges can go off. Cat can go off. They have a host of really good role players. But the Spurs as a team, they're not quite ready. I know Wemby had a quote after the game where he said something along the lines of, you know, it's not that they outplayed us. It's just they have this grit. They have that X factor. I'm completely paraphrasing him. I don't think it's just that. I do think it's the talent level is just not there yet with the Spurs. It's just not. Like, Vassell is very inconsistent ever since he came back from injury. He was 4 of 11 yesterday. Sohan had a really good game, hit multiple threes, 21 points on 10 shots. I really like Sohan, but a lot of those guys on the roster, there's nobody that can pop off in the ways that Bridges or Cat can next to Brunson. He doesn't have that co-star teammate yet, and old man Chris Paul isn't able to do that yet either. So for the Spurs, yes, Wemby's here. For a lot of people watching him for the first time on Christmas Day, tuning into the NBA, it's on in the background. They see this freakish-looking 7'4" guy. They're like, "Ooh, wow, who's that?" Shooting threes and dominating at the basket and turning away everybody from the basket. They're seeing him for the first time, but the team isn't there to lift him up in the ways that he should be already at just 20 years old.
My mother-in-law was watching the game with me, and my daughters were watching the game, and they love Sohan's green hair, the Grinch hair he's been wearing for a while.
So
now.
Cool.
It's great. It pops off. Like, they did that whole Disney character game and an alt, you know, cast. But like, you could watch that game and feel like you're watching a video game with the way that Victor Wembanyama just towers over everybody, and Sohan's got the green hair. You can like watch that game and just be like, this is weird. This is so strange what I'm watching here. And Sohan, like, the two-man game between Wemby and Sohan was awesome to watch. You know, that lob that he had at the rim where it was like, was that a shot? No, that was a lob. That was Wemby recognizing that he's got this guy who's a lob threat. If they're drawing three guys on Wemby, he can dump it over to Sohan for the easy bucket. But like you said, it's a bunch of role players. Like Vassell, until he makes that leap, I know he got paid and he has that kind of ceiling of being a 20-point scorer in the league on high efficiency, but he hasn't shown that consistently. I was actually, after the game, I looked at his box score and I was like, he didn't have a great game. I felt like he had moments, and that dunk, that double pump dunk that he had on the baseline was like, yo, he was like, where's that all the time? I want to see more of that. But Wemby, like, my mother-in-law just was watching, she doesn't watch basketball, and she's like, what do you do with a guy like that? And I'm like, I don't know. And you said it with Waz. It's like, it's not going to be long before there's nothing you can do about that guy. There's nothing you can do to stop him. And he's 20 years old. He's added strength. But when this guy gets to like 25 years old, like, he's going to be so much better, so much stronger. And IQ wise, he's going to have teammates that are going to be able to play with him in ways that his teammates right now are just either too young or too old or not talented enough. I mean, in the last five games, Kev, this guy's averaging 32 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, and 7 blocks per game in his last five. He's shooting 49% from the floor, 41% from three, 88% from the free throw line. He's a guy that in those last five games, the only player in the player track or in the box score tracking era who have had those kind of numbers is Hakeem Olajuwon when he was 27 years old. That's the only player that has had those numbers. 27-year-old.
Prime years.
Prime year Hakeem Olajuwon is this kind of production. So the idea that this is the worst he's going to be, like, think about that. This is going to be the worst he's going to be for the next decade. And then you throw in the talent around him, like you're talking about. I just feel like we are in good hands in the NBA. If that guy is coming through, he is here right now. He is right here right now, Kev.
He is here. And I think the Spurs, it'll be very interesting to see the way they play this out, because he's here. Do you want to accelerate things quickly like the Timberwolves tried to do? They go to a Western Conference Finals last year. Do you want to try to accelerate a bit like the Mavericks did? They go out and get Porzingis, mixed results there. But the team eventually, through a myriad of different moves, they get Kyrie Irving. They go to a Finals. Then Timberwolves and Mavericks did accelerate. It hasn't led to a Finals yet, minus an appearance for Dallas. They faced off with the second game of the day. The Minnesota Timberwolves won this game 105-99. Dallas was down big in the game. They made a run in the fourth quarter. But the big story in the game is Luka injury. That's the big story in the game. Lower body injury. MRI will be done on Thursday. We do not know the results of that yet. He plays only 16 minutes of the game. Seems like Luka could be out for some period of time, Tom. Bad news for Dallas, you'd think, but they also played pretty well with him when he was out earlier this month for a stint. What are your initial thoughts on Luka being out potentially for multiple weeks?
I mean, look at the guy. That's it. Look at the guy. He doesn't look like he's in shape. I can't be surprised that he has a calf strain or that he's out for a considerable amount of time when you look at him. He doesn't look like a healthy player. He looks out of shape, and he still can put up 40, 20, and 10 when he's, you know, looking like this. But I'm not surprised when he pulls up limp, because I just don't think that he takes his body all that seriously. Look at the way he walks. He looks like he's a 70-year-old man the way he walks on the floor. He's not 70. How old's Luka right now, Kev? What, is 25. He 25?
25.
He shouldn't look, his gait should not look like that when he's 25 years old. And I just feel like it was only a matter of time. If he's not going to take care of his body, that we're going to see him out for a considerable amount of time. And it didn't look like it wasn't a big, a high risk play that he was doing. This was a non-contact injury where it was just a regular move that he was making. And I just feel is it weird to say, Kev? I'm not surprised that he has this, you know, soft tissue injury with the way he's looked this season.
No, it's not surprising at all. It, in some ways, it's a bit expected with Luka. And this comes back to our prior conversations, Tom, when it comes to the conditioning aspect. On one hand, you can say he goes from a deep playoff run, you know, to playing Olympics and playing, you know, international basketball, and then he goes to the season, then they make a finals run and blah, 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 blah. You can talk about how he's playing international every single summer and how he's good conditioning in that way, how he keeps getting out there on the floor. Yeah, but these injuries are problematic. He's playing through injury a lot of the time as well. He definitely was working on only one wheel at the end towards the NBA finals this year. It's about maintaining elite level conditioning over the course of the season. And when these injuries start to happen, and you talk about the gait as well, it's unsurprising. And I wish Luka did have that LeBron type of mindset when it came to his body. Because as sensational as he is, and he is sensational, there's still a higher level. There's still another level for him to reach, which speaks to his greatness as a talent. It really does. The fact that we can look at this guy who has put up MVP caliber numbers ever since he walked into the NBA and said, yeah, but you're still not as great as you could be. It speaks to his talent level. And it's like you just wish there was that little bit extra to really take him to the next level. And that's where you look at some of the other young guys in the NBA. Victor Wembanyama clearly has that mindset. The older heads, LeBron has that mindset. Stephen Curry has that mindset. KD has that mindset. Some of the great legends of the past, but the present day great players, future Hall of Famers, Luka does not quite have that X factor in him.
Yeah, it's like, it reminds me of Shaq, where it was like Shaq, even if he wasn't in shape, he could still dominate the game. And so Shaq turned into one of the best players in NBA history, top five center in NBA history. You could probably argue he was the best center in NBA history at his peak, but you've kind of felt like there was another level that he could have gotten to halfway through his career, right? With the Lakers and then with Miami, it just felt like he was leaving a lot on the table. And in some ways, this is European Shaq, where it's like, yo, you are so good. I just wish you were more serious about, you know, the conditioning, your health, the seriousness that it takes to achieve GOAT status in the game. We look at Luka and say, you could be the greatest ever to do it. The way he did it last year in the playoffs just feels like this is inevitable, that his body's going to break down if he doesn't take care of it. And it was an amazing storm back from the Dallas Mavericks to try to close the gap from a 28-point deficit. But they're not going to reach the same heights if Kyrie Irving has to do this by himself. He was sensational in the second half, but this is a huge, huge injury for the Dallas Mavericks. They can do it for a little bit, but not for a full season if he doesn't take care of himself.
And for the Wolves, they ended a three-game losing streak. They had lost to the Knicks, Warriors, and Hawks this past week. They beat the Mavericks on Christmas Day. Upcoming schedule, pretty tough for them. They have the Rockets, Spurs, Thunder, and Celtics this next week. So pretty interesting stretch for them. To me, this Dallas game, I mean, no Luka. I know it's Dallas still, but that's not the best barometer of where this team is. These next four games, however, pretty important for them considering the way they've really struggled as of late. I'm worried, Tom. Last Thursday on the podcast, I opened the show ranting about my concerns with the state of the Timberwolves, the lack of avenues to get better, the way in which the Karl-Anthony Towns trade has not worked out for them at all. DiVincenzo looking like a zero compared to what we saw with him in the Knicks. Julius Randle has a big game on Christmas, but he's going to have those games. For the most part, Timberwolves fans are finding out, like Knicks fans did, about why past fan bases want him gone. And so this Minnesota team, this next stretch, Houston, San Antonio, OKC, Detroit, Boston, that is going to be a better indication of what this team actually is with almost just 1 month to go until the trade deadline.
Great win, but in some ways, it makes me even more nervous. Like you said, they got this upcoming stretch, this gauntlet schedule, part of the schedule. They've had every one of their stars healthy this season. Julius Randle, Anthony Edwards, and Rudy Gobert have not missed a game this season. So this is peak. This is like the best it's going to be. And they got this stretch coming up, and I can't tell you how much of a crime it is to me that we've only seen 17 minutes with the starting lineup with Naz Reid in place of Julius Randle this year. This entire season, Naz Reid in the place of Julius Randle has only played 17 minutes this season as a five-man unit. The score in those 17 minutes, 42-18. With Naz Reid in that spot. I want the offense to be so much better. They have better pieces. Finchie's a great offensive mind, but that offense hasn't scored 110 points in a month, over a month together. They haven't scored at least 110 points in regulation. That's an atrocity. Like, there's too much talent on this team for them not to be able to score at a high level. Even once over a month, they haven't been able to score 110 in regulation. So this offense has been brutal to watch. And their defense has been sharp at times, right? But with Julius Randle out there, it was a cost-cutting move. It was a move that saved their owners' pockets and also some of their kind of flexibility with the cap and the apron. But this, it's not quite a disaster, Kev, but I just don't like the way that they play basketball.
A reminder to listeners to send me in some predictions for 2025 in the NBA to KOCshow@yahoosports.com. We'll be talking about that on next week's episode. KOCshow@yahoosports.com. All right, Tom, let's move on to the Sixers and Celtics. Philly, they go into Boston. Oh, it's before the game. Footage comes out. Joel Embiid taking shots pregame, trips and falls over into the front row. And you're thinking, oh, no, not again. It's happening again. No, no. And then Philly, he plays. He has a good game. 27 points on 15 shots. And the Sixers go into Boston and they get a win on Christmas Day. People wondered, oh, too bad they get scheduled against Boston. They're going to get slaughtered. And they win. Is this a turning point for the Sixers, Tom?
I hope so. I hope so. Caleb Martin, he has to play the Celtics every time, I guess. It's unbelievable what
dude,
he does.
What the hell? How? What is it about that, the green on the other side, that just activates something in him? Caleb Martin turns into a different player against Boston.
Statistically, I forget who I think it might have been Automatic NBA on X. He posted that the last like 2 years, the biggest differential in field goal percentage versus one team versus everybody else, the number one guy on the list is, of course, Caleb Martin against the Celtics. I don't know
That's
what
crazy.
It is. He turns into an all-star. He almost won a freaking Eastern Conference MVP against the Celtics a couple years ago with the Miami Heat. And here he goes. He does it again. Big five lead. You got to have Caleb Martin on your team against the Celtics. Look, the Embiid little scare before the game, it made me feel like Sideshow Bob when he's stepping on the rakes from The Simpsons, where it's like he can't avoid any sort of stepping on the rake. Every time we see this team come together, they completely have some crazy thing to happen to break them apart. The stat going into the game, Kev, was they played five games together, the big three. Paul George, Tyrese Maxey, and Joel Embiid have played five games together. They've only finished two games together. Played five, only finished two. Jeez. Because of Paul George and Embiid getting hurt in those games. So finally, and Paul George didn't play well, but finally we got to see this Sixers team whole in a sense. There was no Andre Drummond, still no Eric Gordon, but they were whole in the sense that they got their big three and they got Caleb Martin playing. I think the biggest stretch of the game was in the beginning of the fourth quarter. No Embiid on the floor. The Sixers looked like the Celtics. They played five out, and Luke Kornet could not stay in front of anybody because of that five out system. And they're just taking people off the dribble. And Tyrese Maxey looked fantastic. But Kyle Lowry was hitting shots. Caleb Martin was hitting shots. And it really just goes to show how hard it is to play in today's NBA. If you're a five and being asked to guard 30 feet away from the basket, Kevin Durant said it after the game, just talking about how hard it is to play in today's NBA. And the Sixers playing five out with Yabusele in the corner. If you're Luke Kornet, like, what are you supposed to do on an island against Tyrese Maxey? It's impossible.
And you mentioned Yabusele. I mean, he's been really good for Philly, man. They signed him out of France. He hadn't played in the NBA since he was in Boston the 18-19 season. And Yabu, his first 2 years in the NBA with the Celtics, he had the fun nickname, the Dancing Bear. He was a little bit of a kind of a fan favorite off the bench in Boston, but he wasn't a very good player. So he goes overseas for 5 years. In the Olympics, he shines for the French national team. And then he goes to Philly, and he's doing a lot of the same stuff, super versatile defensively, shooting 39% from three. He fixed his shot overseas. He continues to be a high-level shooter for Philadelphia. The versatility, the shooting ability, the acceptance of his role, the hustle, the rebounding at his position. Yabu looks like, you know, he's right now, he's only 29 years old, feels like he's going to be this new PJ Tucker in that great Tucker find. Also yep. Tucker yep. away from the NBA for 5 years, mm-hmm. goes overseas, finds himself as a player, and then he's back in the NBA for another 10 years. Yabu at 29, maybe it'll be 6-7 years, but I just don't see him going anywhere. The Sixers season has been a disaster, but if they can get this together, they have a really high-level role player in Yabu to help complement Tyrese Maxey, who is finding himself this month after missing some time. Embiid, if he can get back healthy and stay healthy. And then Paul George, who's been up and down. Some massive ifs, Tom. Yeah, but at the least, if you're a Sixers fan, like, this is the idea of what you're hoping for. You actually saw it for one night against the defending champion. So you have to at least feel like, ah, oh, this does exist. Like, it's here. There's actually that this exists within the team. It's just, can we do this more often?
I know. And wouldn't it be so cool if Jerry McCain was still healthy? I mean,
oh,
it's like,
God. Dude, that's what I thought about yesterday, Tom. Like, if only they had their other positive silver lining from this team too. Like, he felt like, oh my God, if they can get it together, they have an elite six man as a rookie.
One of the best stories of the NBA season. And if he was on Christmas Day doing the stuff he was doing earlier this season, and the TikTok superstar and all the dances and the energy that he brings to this 76ers team, it would have been awesome. And that was the thing I kept coming back to, is on Christmas Day, how awesome the energy was from everybody. It was such a great celebration of why the NBA is great. You had LeBron and Steph going at it. You had the Sixers-Celtics rivalry as feisty as ever. And I know there was no Drew Holiday, and Porzingis had to leave in the second quarter, but you had the big three on the 76ers side. You had healthy Wemby going against the Knicks, the full complement of the Knicks players. It was such a great day in the NBA, and we got an epic game between the Celtics and the Sixers. But I got to ask you here, Kev, getting a little worried about the Celtics? A little panic button here? I mean, you got losers of three of their last four. What is it? Four. They've won four out of the last seven. Yep. Here we go. In the three losses, it was to Chicago, the Magic, and the Sixers, combined 43-46. They're three games under 500 combined records. They have an upcoming West Coast trip coming up on Thursday. Before then, they're going to play Indiana, Toronto, then Minnesota and Houston. Then they got the OKC game. So if they continue to kind of stumble, Porzingis is still hurt. He's got the ankle injury that he had in the second quarter. They could fall out of second place here if the Knicks make a little bit of a run here before that very highly anticipated OKC-Boston matchup. So are you set? Are you pressing that alarm button yet? Or are you just saying they're playing down to their opponents, they're going to be fine?
I think they're bored. Bored, and you know, they have some injuries as well.
Bored.
I think Boston's bored. Now, granted, being bored could hurt you in the end. If you end up with the 2 seed and you have to go against Cleveland on the road, or if the Knicks do surpass you and you're on the road, that might hurt you. Cleveland still on a 70 win pace, 26-4 post Christmas Day, still on a 70 win pace, which is remarkable. So maybe Boston, you know, their December stumbles end up hurting them in May. But I wouldn't be worried unless injuries are an actual issue for them in the postseason. I still view them as the favorites in the East, you know, a tier above everybody else. I know you feel that way with your power rankings as well, your Tom's tiers on your Substack. Still have them as a 5-star contender. I would agree with that still. I've yet to see any evidence to change there. I just think you're seeing some other teams. Cleveland, obviously, took a big step up. Knicks have really found themselves. Magic, they're not a threat with their injuries, unfortunately. I know
they were the other
some,
night. They were the other
they
night.
They were the other
Boston.
Night. I know. But
Tristan Silva. Let's go.
I know. But there's still this feisty regular season team. But unfortunately, with all these injuries, they're just not going to be that team.
Is there anything in that 6-5 December that you are at least a little concerned about, roster construction or just health? Because I'm looking at Porzingis not being able to stay healthy this year. Yes, he's coming back. It's kind of what you're saying about Chet Holmgren. It's like, even if that dude comes back, how much can you really depend on him? Because you're now depending on 38-year-old Al Horford and Luke Kornet at the five with Porzingis in and out of the lineup. So I don't know if that is a long-term issue. You're saying feels like a short-term issue, not a long-term one.
I think it's more of a short-term issue. I mean, look, dude, all of last season, I said Boston needs Porzingis in order to win the finals. They really didn't. They didn't need KP last year. Like, they got him back in the finals, but he didn't finish the finals. So I don't think they necessarily need Porzingis to win the finals. He's just the piece that puts them way over the top of everybody else. It would be a tougher series against the Knicks or the Cavs or even a Bucks team playing at an elite level. But I don't think they necessarily need Porzingis. I'm not pressing the panic switch for Boston yet. To me, this is just a regular season stretch of boredom for them and other teams that are really playing hard, trying to find themselves. Like the Sixers, they get their starters back. They're trying to find themselves. This game just matters more to them. Now, if this continues into January and into February and they continue to play average basketball, I think over the course of time, then I would start to worry more often. But for now, no, I'm not pressing the panic switch with Boston quite yet. Let's move on, Tom, to that other game you mentioned between the Lakers and the Warriors with LeBron, Steph Curry, two legends in the game. And boy, what a game we saw between LA and Golden State. 115-113. Austin Reeves hit a game-winning layup at the end of the game. He said he's almost cried. He's like, I'm not supposed to be here, hitting that game winner after that game. Because that game winner, and he hit two clutch free throws, by the way. Just unbelievable explosion from LeBron and Steph with multiple big shots from each of them. Steph with some crazy double bang three from Mike Breen on the game tying three.
Bang! Bang!
So good. And then LeBron had a big block. Just, dude, I said it on X, don't take LeBron and Steph for granted. I will not. I try to remind myself before watching those guys, hey, you're watching two legends that you're going to look back on someday and say, boy, Kev, like someday when I'm old, boy, you were lucky to watch those guys when you were young, when you were first start covering the league. And that's the way I felt yesterday because, man, woo, they're still doing it. How, Tom? LeBron turns 40 in a couple days.
Kev, I was just saying, like, remember that game in 2006 or whatever when he was dominating the Detroit Pistons when he arrived? He was 22 years old, and he's still doing that. He's still doing that. The stuff where you're like, crazy. Yo, how does he keep doing this? You know, like the block on Andrew Wiggins where he came out of nowhere and was like, yo, I'm gonna pick up Steph in the switch in the half court. And then as soon as anybody gets downhill, I'm gonna come weak side and do a classic LeBron chase down out of nowhere and block the out of Andrew Wiggins. And that was, you know, one of these things where you're like, if he can just draw this up, the energy that it requires to play like that, it's going to be tough to beat the Lakers. They get that big Austin Reeves game where he goes a triple-double and has those big moments down the stretch. Like that was the moment where you're like, okay, this is what the Lakers are supposed to look like, but it takes a role player, Austin Reeves, he's more than a role player, but the fact that he can get a triple-double in that big moment is so helpful for LeBron. It's just, yo, LeBron was switching on to Steph, you know, like in late game situations. Steph hit that one-legged three in the corner. It was brilliantly defended by LeBron. And the only way that shot goes in is if it's taken by number 30. Like, that's the only way that shot goes in. Otherwise, marvelously defended. They were switching LeBron on to Steph. And you got to see those just signature moments of Steph going at LeBron, and then LeBron was switched on to Steph on the other side, and it just was great theater, great drama, and Steph would not give up. It was such a great game, and I got to hand it to everybody who brought it in that Christmas Day game. Like LeBron said it after the game, like, I'm sorry, NFL, I love you guys, but today is our day, and they proved it, and I just felt like as a fan, Kev, everybody brought it. And that's what it's going to take to maintain your market share in a really difficult media atmosphere. The NBA has to continue this momentum from Christmas Day games, because like that was everything we loved about the NBA, was LeBron going at Steph. And I know we've got other budding rivalries in the league, but they set the bar before the game, during the game, after the game. It just felt like this was a marquee event in a regular season. This was the marquee event.
Do you think LeBron was watching football, though, earlier in the day? Don't you think he probably had the NFL on?
Yeah, I do.
I think he was probably watching football.
Yeah, you know, that was him being like, I did watch you guys, but it's still our day. Like, he's definitely watching. But, like, you know, like, when they
there
when
were
they
two
had,
crappy NFL games. They're like, they weren't good games.
Yeah, no, we're going to do the whole, like, ratings. Was it actually a good game or, you know, whatever. We're going to do the post-hoc analysis of whether it was a good game. These were by far the more entertaining product. If you had the choice between NFL and NBA, it's not even close. It's all the other stuff. It's the fantasy football. It's the Beyonce concert. It's all the stuff around the NFL. But the actual games?
Give me Red Panda. Give me Red Panda over Beyonce.
Let's go.
Give me Red Panda.
I don't know if that says more about Red Panda than it does about how we feel about a concert that felt like that was the main event. I'm telling you, the concert felt like the main event yesterday, and the NFL games were secondary, right? Like, the NFL games, those were whatever. I was watching the NBA, so maybe I can't really speak intelligently about the games.
Yeah, I don't know. I did not have the NFL games on either. Actually, at the Christmas party I was at, there's no sports on. It's just all family. I don't know. Like, usually there's sports on TV. Nobody had sports on. Very, very, very unusual. So
they're not sickos like us who are like, hey, we got to make sure we watch all the sports
I'm the only sicko who's there. Checking on my phone, asking what the Wi-Fi is.
Yeah, you're in the
that
corner.
That was me yesterday. Yes, exactly. Yeah but most of the games I actually caught up with once I got home and this morning. So I didn't see everything live. I did see Lakers-Warriors live because of the timing of the game. I was home at the time already. But with Wolves-Mavericks, I did not see that live. Sixers-Celtics, did not see that live. Nor did I see the Nuggets-Suns game live. But Lakers-Warriors, I did. And one of my favorite moments in the game, it was a signature moment. It wasn't Steph hitting a big three or LeBron hitting a big shot with a block. It was Draymond Green's double suplex just pulling down Dalton Connect and Rui Hachimura. What a moment.
I'm telling you, dude, I know people say he's got a career on, like, inside the NBA. Like, he's going to be the next Barkley. Yo, he is going to be the next The Rock. Like, when he did there, it was great acting.
He's
a great talker. You're telling me that this guy can't be the next WWE superstar with the way he acted on that play and just the way he runs his mouth? It's fantastic.
He should do it. He really should. He would be perfect doing WWE. As long as he wants to train for it and continue being a high-level athlete into his 40s, to me, he is tailor-made for it. He is. Like, TV, you can wait on that, but to have a stint doing WWE, Draymond would be incredible. Especially with the mouth. The way he talks, it'd be amazing.
He's got great body control. You know, the Stone Cold Stunner.
Especially his legs. The legs, the great body control, the way his kicking.
Yeah, yeah. The Stone Cold Stunner starts when you kind of kick the guy in between the legs a little bit, and then you do the boom behind. I mean, he's got that down. Draymond, great talk. I feel like we're coming up with, like, a great, you know, pitch for Draymond to just be like, you know what, I'm going to start my own path. I'm going to go fully into the WWE. He's great at setting the stage. You know, he's got his own podcast. We know that he can do the talks. I just feel like, you know, Steph, it's so amazing to watch him next to Steph because he's perfectly complimentary to Steph. Like, he does all the things that Steph doesn't do. And I'm just so glad that they, like, married each other in basketball terms for their careers, because it is great to watch them at the peak of their powers for all these years. Cause he's, like, the antithesis of what Steph is. And he's just, I don't know. That was an incredible moment in the NBA. The pull down, the flopping as soon as it happens, he's like, he's like, oh, it's just great.
A quick reminder to listeners to subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show if you have not done so already. And let's get to the next 100 likes over on Spotify as well. Give us a thumbs up over there. It does help out the show. And when we're back, I have another question for you, Tom, about the Lakers and Warriors. All right, Tom. So the Lakers and Warriors face off. We see the Lakers win. They're 17-13 on the season. The Warriors are 15-14. Now, it's been interesting. We've seen a lot of rumors about the Warriors being a trade team. this offseason. It's about Lauri Markkanen. Well, he's off the table. He can't be traded now after re-signing with the Jazz. Now it's about Jimmy Butler for Golden State. Whereas with the Lakers, it's a bit more quiet. There's no clear-cut top target. They haven't been attached to Jimmy Butler. The Zach LaVine stuff isn't really strong right now out there, like we've seen them flirting with the LaVine stuff in the past. I feel like watching these two teams throughout the season, that was true again on Christmas Day. Lakers win this game, 80 plays 7 minutes. He says he'll be back healthy. He's going to play Saturday against the Kings, so not a lot to talk about with the injury. But with the Lakers winning this game without AD, who's been arguably their best player this season throughout, especially to start the season, he was clearly their best. I feel like the Lakers are the team that's more worthy of investment of future assets, more so than the Warriors, who were just kind of bland for the most part this season. Like, even the last play of the game, their best perimeter defender, Andrew Wiggins, just gets smoked by Austin Reeves. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know if there's a solution to this Warriors team to really propel them up to contender status, whereas I feel the Lakers have one of the best defenders in the league in Anthony Davis. LeBron James can still be one of the best players in the league on any night. Their role players are more consistent. Guys like Austin Reeves can level up. We've seen it in the postseason. We saw it on Christmas Day. To me, the Lakers feel like the team that's more worthy of investment, and yet there's not a lot of noise about them as a team that's going to make a trade.
Yeah, like, does Clint Capella or Jonas Valanciunas really move the needle for them? Like, they would help, but, like, is that enough to make you get excited about the Lakers?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, Jonas is okay. He's okay. He's fine.
Yeah.
He's fine.
Like, I think Atlanta would move Capella if prompted, if someone offers something legit. I think they would move Capella on an expiring contract, and I think I've said for years, Onyeka Okongwu is the guy there. I'd love to see him take over that starting spot. He has to improve a little bit defensively to be the starting center there long term. But I think a guy like Capella, Valanciunas could help the Lakers, certainly to just keep Anthony Davis healthy. I mean, if the concern there is that he can't bang as the five, 82 games out of the year, and maybe you preserve his body in the same way that, like, Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan, JaVale McGee did in the past, just to get him to the postseason, and he can play at the four until the postseason when you need him to switch over to the five, fine. But to me, I don't know. If I'm the Warriors, I make that Jimmy Butler trade. I don't think he makes as much sense over there on the Lakers, but I think he makes a lot more sense for the Warriors that need kind of a jolt offensively and defensively, and someone who can take a little bit off of Steph. Because I think, like, if you're going to move Andrew Wiggins, Kuminga, or Moody, or, I mean, Pods, I don't know what you're going to expect in return for him, but if you're going to move the picks and a couple of young guys, it's going to have to be for a Jimmy Butler, a playoff performer. I just don't see who else is out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, for Golden State, for the Lakers, you got to do something. You can't just bypass the opportunity with Steph and LeBron and AD still playing, and Draymond still playing at this level for your respective teams. You can't. The window is open. Like, OKC is the best team in the Western Conference right now, but they're not. They're still a young team. Mm-hmm. They're still beatable in a postseason setting, you'd think, if you level up your own roster. Houston's a young team. Memphis is still a young team with flaws. All these teams have flaws. Denver has flaws, which we'll talk about in a second. All of these teams have flaws. So the window is open before, you know, a year from now, OKC another year older. Maybe next year OKC's not 100% healthy. Maybe they make a big move and they even bolster their team more. Wemby will continue to ascend. The Spurs will make additions that make that team stronger. The window will go from feeling open to suddenly being shut, especially as LeBron ages more and Steph ages more and those guys get worse as they age. So this is the moment. There's a chance here to go try to get another one. Even if you're not the favorite, you can at least give yourself a chance. So I very much look forward to seeing what these teams do. I agree with you, Tom. If I'm the Warriors, I go out and get Jimmy Butler, because Kuminga is probably not part of your future. You don't want to re-sign him. Butler's a clear upgrade from Wiggins, so it's worth giving up some of that future draft capital in addition to that. And then for the Lakers, I'm not quite sure what the specific move is. I think adding a big Walker Kessler, I'd love for the Lakers, get him from the Jazz. Walker Kessler, so you can have that two big lineup with AD. But I don't, Walker Kessler's not putting you over the top necessarily. I just feel like with all these Western Conference teams, every one of them, it's all about, well, what trades are they going to make? It's the same thing with Denver and Phoenix. They finished off the night, and we see Denver lose again 110 to 100 to the Phoenix Suns. With the Suns, it's all about, well, can they find a better center? Will they trade Bradley Beal for Jimmy Butler? With Denver, it's like, well, what do you do with Michael Porter Jr.? Jamal Murray can't be traded, but we need somebody better than him. So it's all about trades. With all of these teams that have been here for years with star players and have contended for years, it's all about how they get better. And for Denver, they smoked the Suns earlier this week, then they lose by 10 on Christmas Day to Phoenix. And boy, like, Gordon goes out in the game, but losing against the Suns with no Devin Booker, that's a tough one for me, man. Like, that's a really tough loss. These are the games Denver needs to win. And what I'm confused about is part of the reason they won that first matchup this week against the Suns is the energy off the bench that was brought from Jalen Pickett and Hunter Tyson, just full throttle effort. And then they get DNPs on Christmas. I'm confused. Like, I feel like when it comes to the Malone versus Booth stuff, their GM versus coach, I tend to more blame Malone here. They don't have an offense when Jokic is off the floor. They have no offense without Jokic. They never have. For years, they haven't developed one. And then he just doesn't have any consistency with his rotations at all. Like, where is not that Pickett or Tyson are these big names who are going to change everything for you, but they played great earlier in the week. Like, they brought what you needed. Pickett, defensive size at the guard position, some downhill attacking. Tyson, size at the wing, shooting ability, movement, energy on defense. And then you got Peyton Watson, just a terrible performance on Christmas. Where are these other young guys? Like, I just don't get it from Malone with some of the lineup choices and rotation choices that we've seen from him the past year plus. It's just, I really feel like there's something wrong with this Denver system. I think he's lost the locker room. I think Denver has lost what made them great before with their chemistry. And this in part stems from some of the rotation decisions and, of course, the roster that's been put together by Booth. But I just want to see some of those kids play more for Denver, man. I feel like you got to invest in that youth.
There's something poisonous about that Nuggets franchise right now. It just feels like something's off. Like, between the Michael Malone and Calvin Booth, like, animosity publicly, that's like leaking publicly in his post-game press conferences. And then Jokic, I feel like, Kev, you know, when you go on X and you say, like, don't take LeBron James for granted, don't take LeBron and Steph for granted. I feel like the message needs to be sent to the organization: don't take Nikola Jokic for granted. Yo, this dude has not piped up at all about not having an all-star, all defense, or all-NBA teammate in his entire career. He's never piped up about, hey, I need another guy. I need some help here. He hasn't done that yet, but it's coming. You know it's coming, Kev, because you can't keep doing this. The dude had 2 assists in the game and 16 potential assists. His teammate shot 2 of 16 on potential assists from Nikola Jokic. I was like, yo, he only had 2 assists in that game? How did he only have 2 assists in that game? And then I went deeper into the box score. I went on NBA.com and looked up how many potential assists he had. He had 16. And they shot 2 of 16 on those potential assists. Can't happen. You can't be playing with this amazing talent in Nikola Jokic and do something like that on Christmas Day without something happening. Something has to happen in Denver, and it's not going to be on Jokic in terms of, like, his play. He's already checked all the boxes we can expect, but there's going to be a time where he passes out, or he has a great dumb pass in the middle, and they smoke a layup, or they miss a violent three-pointer miss. There's going to be a time where Jokic is just fed up, and he's going to say something crazy, and we're all going to be like, thank you. Thank you. Like, we've been waiting for this moment because everyone else feels a little too comfortable to me that you got Jokic out here trying to do everything. And I just can't. That's the stat of the game for me. 2 of 16 off of Jokic passes is nuts. It's nuts because he always puts it on a platter for his teammates. And for them to smoke 14 shots, that's nuts, Kev. That's nuts.
I mean, and Jokic has said some things that like have indicated clearly this frustration. He had a quote earlier this month where he said, "Well, what have you learned about the Nuggets so far this season?" He said that we can surprise in a good way and bad way everybody, literally everybody. And like you can see it on his face with the frustration, the comments he's made. Harrison Wind over at DNVR, you know, posted last night. He said, I can't remember Jokic ever being more visibly frustrated with his teammates, the way he acts in the court, but also the things that he said off of the court. And I think that's 100% true. And so we have this conversation every year. Is this star going to be traded? Is that star going to be traded? Is that guy going to get asked out of the organization? Is Giannis going to ask out? The Bucks suck. Is Giannis going to get traded? Should OKC go get him? It doesn't happen with Jokic because everybody assumes this guy who loves horses is going to want to stay home in Denver for the rest of his career. But there might come a point that it gets so bad for a franchise that has no future fixed picks to trade, that has no young players of value to trade, that really has only MPJ to trade a value, it might come to a point that Joker's like, dude, KD's over there calling me one of the 10 greatest players of all time. He's right. I can't finish with just one ring. I need to go out and win championships. Trade me here. Because why wouldn't it? If you're Jokic, I know you love Denver and you'd want to be a lifer there and you're not somebody who does that. But if it doesn't get better, why would he not try to look for another organization? So the pressure really, really needs to be on that Denver front office and on the coaching staff and on ownership, which has been notoriously cheap for years, and getting it right around this guy, or else he should just look somewhere else. Because if they're not going to do it for him, find another organization that does. Because this dude is playing the best basketball in his entire life individually. He keeps getting better. After championships, after one championship, after multiple MVPs, they can't take Nikola Jokic for granted.
100%. And you heard KD after the game. I said everybody brought it yesterday. Like everybody brought it in terms of making these games feel bigger than a regular season game. After the game, KD was asked about, you know, what's it like, you know, being part of the NBA where you had LeBron and Steph earlier in the day and how great it is to be in the NBA and performing at this level. And he's like, it's not just us three. That guy over there, Jokic, like he's incredible too. And the icon, incredible, a Hall of Famer, Russell Westbrook. Like the way KD speaks about other players and the state of the game, all this stuff is so important. He went on Twitter and went after this guy who was saying too many threes, the game's cooked and blah, blah, blah. And KD like talks some sense into this dude being like, yo, it is so hard to defend in today's NBA. The way that spacing is, you used to be able to just defend arm's length away from a guy and he wouldn't shoot the ball. And so it was okay. It was easier to play defense back in the day because of the sheer spacing and the geometry of the game. And it was like, thank you. We need more of that talk in the loudest voices in the room to explain how good these guys are, how good Jokic is, how good Wemby is. And I loved Anthony Edwards after the game talking about Kyrie in the same way where he was like, yo, man, it was so cool to play against Kyrie, against the dude who I watched YouTube clips with my little brother. Like, this was an amazing game for me, and how exciting. All of that was why we love the NBA and the players speaking to the greatness of the NBA. We need more of that. And last thing, this is a little rant that I have. Kyrie didn't get crossed over, okay? Anthony Edwards was setting him up for a high screen with Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert set the screen. Kyrie Irving went over the screen like he's supposed to, defending the pick and roll. And Anthony Edwards went the other way. It wasn't he crossed Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving was doing a sound defensive play by trying to fight over the screen. That's not a crossover. He didn't break his ankles. It was a cool play. But for the life of me, that is the smart defensive play to go over a screen there. And that's not a crossover. That is just a guy defending the right way in a pick and roll. That is not him breaking his ankles. I'm defending Kyrie Irving here. It was a good basketball play, but save me the whole like, oh, he crossed over Kyrie Irving. I hate that. Like the crossovers into pick and rolls where the guy's jumping the screen. It is not crossing over, dudes. I'm sorry. I get agitated. Tom,
did you get in a Christmas party argument with somebody about this yesterday?
It's just seeing, like, opening up my Instagram and seeing, like, oh, Anthony Edwards got Kyrie Irving there. And I'm like, he didn't. Like, it's not a crossover in the same way that Allen Iverson got MJ one-on-one. It's pick and roll coverage.
Did you have a good Christmas?
A great Christmas. I had a great Christmas. My two girls, they're 5 and 7, and they are just, I mean, Christmas, just watching Christmas through their eyes is, there's nothing better. There's nothing better. So I had great basketball, great family around me, and it is just, it's the best time of the year.
That's awesome. It was my first Christmas back in Boston in 2 years now. So it was beautiful to be around family, loved ones, seeing them, get to see my mom with her sisters. It was a great day. It was a really good day. And it was great basketball. That made it all even better. Tom, I really enjoyed talking about these Christmas Day games with you. You and I will be back again next week on a Thursday recording, Friday episode, and then I'll be back again on Tuesday as well with another guest on the Kevin O'Connor Show. Tom, Merry Christmas, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, don't take the NBA for granted, everybody.
Do not. Tune into those games. Tom, thank you for joining me. Thanks to Brett for producing, and thanks to you for giving us a lesson. Please subscribe if you have not done so already. It does help out the show. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy the NBA.